10. I drank coffee, and then I called 3 different pounds on the landline. Yes, he was chipped. Yes, he'd had all his shots. Yes, he still had the collar with the rabies tag on it. No, this number didn't have voicemail. No, my cell phone wasn't working reliably, but they could leave a message, or send an email, or they could call the coffee shop in town. I prayed Enid wouldn't mind. I didn't think she would. It was all so normal and efficient. There was a system. I put on my pleasant, doing business with people voice, and I answered questions. And all the time I wanted to scream, "Do you know there are monsters in the woods? And if there are monsters in the woods, then the whole world is not what we pretend it is? Do you understand?" I did not say this, because that would have made me sound crazy and it wouldn't have helped get Bongo back. But every time I got off the phone, I had to pace back and forth for a minute, drinking lukewarm coffee while my teeth chattered on the edge of the mug. I wasn't cold. I was jittery with knowledge and horror. When I had called the last pound, I stared into the empty coffee pot. Apparently, I'd drunk all of it. I went to the front porch and looked down the steps. The round thing that had turned under my feet was a bone. I know that sounds sinister, but when you have dogs, you get used to some things. I don't know what kind of bone it was, just a normal bone with a knob on one end and a knot-off spike on the other. It was stained deep orange red. You didn't need to be a geologist to know it was the color of the red clay that lay under the soil here, exposed every time someone dug a hole. Had the effigy left it? Dropped it on the steps as it left the house, like it was shedding? No, get a hold of yourself. It's just a bone. For all I knew, Bongo had dug it up sometime when I wasn't looking, and it had gotten kicked onto the stairs. Should I call the police? And tell them what exactly? I saw a monster, and then there was a bone on the stairs, and my dog ran away after something. I thought of Officer Bob. I thought of walking through the trees, looking for the effigy. And then I thought, oh, sweet fuck, what if it was alive when I saw it? What if it was hanging in the tree, watching me? What if it was just playing possum and laughing to itself? What if it was chasing us when we ran? No. No, it had been daylight. Surely things like that weren't allowed to come around in daylight. Were they? Allowed by whom? This train of thought would end with me crouched in the bathroom with a shotgun aimed at the door. This would not help Bongo. And also, I didn't know how to use a shotgun. If I were a good owner, I would go out into the woods and call for him and bring treats. I inhaled sharply at the thought. I couldn't do it. I knew I should. I really did. But I couldn't go back out just yet. Not alone. Not even for him. What if I go looking and find another effigy and it's Bongo?
What if they make another one out of him, and he comes to the window with his skull flipped over and his paws on the windowsill, and I twisted myself around like the twisted ones?
I screamed. I actually screamed and swept everything off the counter. It was only the ramen and the oatmeal boxes and a plastic cup of water. The cup bounced. I never do things like that. I don't throw things. I don't scream. I never understood people who lobbed toasters at their boyfriends. Why would you waste a perfectly good toaster? Well, I'm under a lot of stress. Monsters are stressful. And I should probably stop drinking coffee. I paced back and forth. I went to the bathroom. I paced back and forth some more. I should do something. I should move boxes. Why am I moving boxes when there are monsters in the woods? I paced back and forth, clenching and unclenching my fists, and finally I said out loud, "Because the boxes have to get moved." I went to the doll room. It smelled of my grandmother's malice, which was nothing compared to what had stared in the window last night. I hauled plastic bins out of the hallway, filled with dead baby dolls and plastic newborns with their eyes squeezed shut, and I felt only vague, impartial disgust. I wrestled the bins onto the tailgate and into the bed of the truck. Somehow, I'd thought there'd been more doll bins in the truck already. I vaguely remembered taking some out last night, but the bed was nearly empty, so that must have been the last load. Probably all the junk was starting to blur together. Probably I wasn't terribly reliable at the moment. The truck filled with dolls. I slammed another plastic crate down on the tailgate, hard enough to make the truck bounce. The lid popped off, and dolls flew. Shit! Holy Jesus, said Foxy, coming up the drive. Was your grandma in a cult or something? I let out a thin laugh, choked on it, and put my face in my hands. Oh, honey, what's wrong? Before I quite knew what was happening, I was sobbing on Foxy's non-existent bosom. She was all collarbones and necklaces. Bongo's gone, I choked out. He ran off. I hope he ran off. There's things in the woods, Foxy. I saw one. I think I'm going crazy. Oh, God, what if they got him?
Easy now, said Foxy, patting my back. Easy, hon. We'll get it sorted.
She patted me for a few minutes, just long enough for me to start feeling horrified and embarrassed instead of horrified and overwhelmed, and then produced a handkerchief from somewhere in her pockets. I wiped my eyes. I'm sorry, I said.
Don't be. You ain't the first to cry on me, or the tenth. Now, let's go to my place and have some lemonade, and we can sit on the porch, and you can tell me all what happened.
You'll think I'm crazy, I whispered. My throat was raw.
Sure, but I won't hold that against you.
Foxy led me across the road as I leaned on her arm. I felt like I was limping with both feet. As soon as I was sitting on her porch, I felt better. Foxy had wind chimes hanging all over the porch, and some of them were stones with holes in them. But they went click-clack-jangle in a cheerful manner, like Foxy's bangles rattling together, not like a monster with stones in its ribs. There were other people around. I had an idea somehow that the thing wouldn't show up in front of other people.
Maybe that was a horror movie idea, that monsters only show up when you're alone, but I felt safe.
Foxy went inside and came out a moment later with a pitcher of lemonade and two glasses. I took one and drank it while the condensation ran down over my fingers.
All right, she said.
She sat down beside me on the steps, and we looked out over the winding driveway in the grass. I couldn't see my grandmother's house from here. From the very slight elevation, I could see a little way over the woods behind the house. There was no hill, and no ring of hills, and somehow that didn't surprise me. I told her everything.
I started crying again when I had to explain that Bongo was missing, and then I said out loud the thing I hadn't wanted to think, which was that the thing would get him, and I should have protected him, and I'd failed, and he'd trusted me because I was his human, and then I burst into tears again.
Now stop that, said Foxy sharply. You don't know that at all. He might come on back tonight full of deer ticks and smelling like skunk.
I scrubbed at my face. You think so?
Wouldn't surprise me. Dogs are smart enough to be afraid. If he ran off, I can promise it wasn't after one of them.
I took another gulp of lemonade. You believe me?
About the thing? Believe you? Shit.
The lines of her face deepened, and for a minute she looked a lot older than 60.
Of course. Didn't realize until just now that you don't know.
Know what? I said blankly.
About them, the people in the hollers, whatever you want to call them.
I don't know anything. I spread my hands. What am I supposed to know? Foxy shook her head.
I messed up, she said. I thought you had to know about them, at least a bit. Figured your granny would have told you.
Ha, I said, and took a slug of lemonade.
Yeah, not the brightest thing I've ever thought. But when you said you saw the hill, I figured you had to know something, 'cause you got up there in the first place and then got out again.
She glared into her lemonade. I don't know anything, I repeated. What am I supposed to know about? Who's in the hollers? There aren't even any hollers around here, are there?
Sometimes there are, sometimes there ain't. It comes and goes. Most times there's no problems, you understand. Sometimes things get turned around and you end up in country that ain't supposed to be there.
Like hills that don't exist?
Yeah, like that.
But how is that possible? I flapped my hands. Hasn't somebody made a topographic map or taken photos or something and noticed that there was a hill that wasn't supposed to be there? Foxy shook her head.
Don't think it's that easy to get there. I only done it once myself. And ye show up spouting foolishness about hills, being where everybody knows there's no hills. Who's gonna believe you? They can look over and see there's no hill there.
But what? How?
Foxy sighed. I don't know. I mean, people say they know things and try to look smart, but I don't think anybody knows anything for sure. The hills are just where the holler people live. Old-timers talk about seeing them now and again, tall and skinny and white like nobody you ever saw.
I didn't see anybody like that, I said. I thought of the hiker I'd seen. The one dressed like a hippie, but she hadn't been particularly tall and pale, had she? Not unnaturally so, anyway.
Yeah, never seen one either. But the deer thing's one of theirs. They leave stuff around sometimes. Mostly it's piled up stones and marks on trees. Talking to each other, like. But sometimes they make something that walks around.
I clutched my lemonade. The porch didn't seem quite so safe anymore. But why?
Foxy shrugged. Dunno. I only seen it twice. One was a hog, but they'd stuck a wasp's nest where its head ought to be.
It was out digging up fields, and a friend of my daddy's shot it.
Couldn't get too close to it 'cause of the wasps, so they threw hay over it and burned it. They're uncanny, but they ain't fireproof.
That's a relief, I said faintly. What about the other time?
Raccoon. Thought it had rabies or something. It was sort of shuffling around, but you got close enough, you could see it was all held together with cords and junk.
What did you do?
Ran it over with a tractor a couple times. Had to stop using that chunk of field, of course. Daddy said the ground would be bad under it. This was over in Bynum. When we sold the place, we told them that bit was bad, but I doubt they listened. Still, I figure if you're growing all those weird-ass glow-in-the-dark soybeans, a little bad magic ain't gonna make things much worse.
So it's magic, then? Foxy rolled her eyes.
It's making dead animals walk around and hills vanish. What the hell else would it be? Aliens?
But magic, I mean, I flailed. Magic, in my head, was a mix of stage magicians in white gloves and really well-meaning people who did yoga and believed in the healing power of crystals. I attempted to express this to Foxy, who looked at me like I was a baby bird that had fallen out of the nest and hit its head.
I don't think the holler people are doing yoga, she said.
But where are they?
I don't know. Little to one side of here, I think. Somewhere like this, but with hills and hollers. They come through sometimes, and we go through sometimes, and sometimes the way's open, sometimes it ain't. You must have gone through when it was open. Dumb luck or something.
It was Bongo, I said. He found the way through.
Yeah, a lot of dogs would have thought twice, but hounds get a smell and their brain turns off. Well, you know. But even he was smart enough to be scared of one of their walking things.
And nobody reports this. Nobody says, hey, there's a bunch of scary people around here making dead animals walk around? She snorted.
Yeah, that'd be good for a story. Hillbillies claim the woods are haunted. Blame little people. Or if they did find one of the walking things, it'd be redneck satanic horror. We'd have reporters in the shitter and nobody'd find anything, assuming anybody even listened in the first place.
So nobody knows then.
Most old-timers round here get a notion. But you talk about it and you sound crazy, so nobody talks about it much. And the cops just shrug. That sheriff fella who was out here earlier,
he knows the stories, I'll bet you. But what kind of cop is gonna admit they believe in that kind of thing?
They'd get laughed out of the station. And if you get any of them ghost hunter people, they head over to Chatham and the devil's tramping ground. Though I'll tell you, I've been there, and the devil needs to throw out them old refrigerators if he wants to do any serious tramping. Place is a dump.
But she looked at me over the rim of her jar.
Think about it, hon. You tell somebody, how you gonna start?
I took a deep, shuddering breath and drank more lemonade, trying to think of an answer. Sure, Enid and Officer Bob had believed me about the effigy hanging from a tree, but if I tried to tell them it had been in the window, that it had been alive? Officer Bob probably already half believed that I was making things up. Enid seemed like she might be more sympathetic, but what was she going to do about it? Come fight the effigy off with a thermos of decaf? I imagined calling my father and saying, Dad, there's monsters in the woods. Dad, I saw something horrible, and the weird woman across the road says it's the holler people, and I climbed a hill that wasn't there, and there was a deer effigy hanging in the trees, but when I tried to call the cops, it was gone, and then it came back at night in my window? No, I didn't dream it.
Even in my head, it sounded stupid.
The wind chimes blew back and forth in a wind that smelled like turned earth and spring, not like raccoons held together with cords and hogs with wasp nests where their heads would be.
Like I said, I figured your granny'd have told you something, said Foxy after a while.
Didn't think about what a nasty piece of work she was.
I don't think she knew, I said. Cockgrave, her husband, he knew something. He had a journal and said he saw them in Wales. Foxy nodded.
Figure you get any set of old hills, you'll have something in it. Probably holler people all over the world, if you know where to look.
I shuddered. This was not a comforting thought. He also said he thought that things didn't come around her, that she smelled bad to them or something.
Huh, said Foxy.
She thought about that.
Suppose that makes sense. Some smells you just don't want to be around. Skip can't stand liver, won't even come in the house if I'm cooking it. Doesn't mean he's scared of liver. Don't think the holler people are scared of much, but I can see him giving that house a wide berth unless they had to go there.
I think it's why he married her, I said. He had some kind of experience with them in Wales, and then he thought she was safe because they just didn't want to be around her. Foxy snorted.
Lord, talk about being caught between the devil and the deep blue sea.
Yeah, his journal's rambling, but by the end he's saying he'd rather deal with them. Cockgrave's white people Must be the same as Foxy's holler people. If I could find his typed manuscript, surely it'd have something more, wouldn't it? Assuming it existed. Assuming he knew anything for certain. Assuming his medication hadn't been playing tricks on him and it wasn't a letter to Ambrose. Ambrose, I don't know who you were, but I wish I could talk to you or smack you or something.
So, what are you going to do?
Asked Foxy. I have to stay, I said. It was easier to say out loud than I expected. Until Bongo comes back. Foxy nodded.
You can come stay here, she said. I ain't saying they won't come here, but company's better than none.
I took a deep breath. I want to, I said. But if he comes back, he'll come to the house. He got out once back in Pittsburgh, and he came back after 3 days of rabbit chasing. I tried not to think about what would happen if Bongo decided to go home to Pittsburgh. The noses on hounds are good enough that I won't swear he couldn't smell his way back there, while I sat in a house surrounded by deer monsters. There comes a point where terrible things are funny. It's the point where the furnace is broken and the hot water heater is leaking and your dog comes in smelling of skunk and the check engine light has come on when you go to get tomato juice. You stop crying and you stop being frustrated because none of that will help. All you can do is start laughing hysterically because that's the only thing that's left. Foxy let me laugh. Until it started to get weird, and then she slapped me on the back repeatedly, as if I were having a coughing fit.
Settle down there, hon. Get it all out. I got some stuff that might help you, or might not, but it never hurts to try.
Foxy's stuff was a little velvet bag of herbs and a rosary with round wooden beads.
Got it at the state fair for $3, she said cheerfully. The roots, though, that's from a guy down south who said he studied under Doc Buzzard.
Doc Buzzard? I asked.
A hoodoo man. He was probably lying, but you never know. Anyway, it ain't gonna hurt. You know how to pray the rosary?
No. She looked faintly disappointed, but rallied anyway.
It don't matter. The holler people ain't religious, but the beads are hickory, and hickory's special.
In all of Aunt Kate's botanical musings, she had never covered the specialness of hickory.
I knew oak and ash and rowan from reading fantasy novels, but not hickory. I said as much to Foxy.
No, no. She said, it ain't magic. It's the other way around. We got hickory over here, but I don't think they got it over there. You got hickory with you. You got a piece of the world that's normal. It's so normal, it'll cancel out some of the weirdness. You follow?
Clearly, I was losing my mind, because that actually made a kind of sense. I went back to the house with a hickory rosary and a bag of dried roots draped around my neck. Maybe it was the rosary, or the talk, or the lemonade. Maybe it was just guilt, or the restless, edgy feeling that I had to do something. But I took my courage in both hands and walked into the woods, shouting Bongo's name and listening for the knocking of hagstones in between shouts. I scoured the woods around the house, but Bongo still wasn't there. All right, I said, going back into the house. Next thing. I turned the radio on so I had something to talk to and went through the house, checking for monsters. There weren't any, or if there were, they were upstairs on the second floor. I shut down that train of thought quickly. Elaine Rogers told me about the great programs that were only available because of my help. I was starting to wonder if this radio station ever played anything but Pledge Week spots. If I was going to stay in the house tonight, I was not going to sleep in the bedroom with the window right there where things could look in. Bongo was loud enough when barking to wake the dead. If he showed up on the porch and started yelling to be let in and given dinner, I'd be able to hear it through a few layers of wood. "Bathroom it is, then," I said. I stripped Cockgrave's bed and tossed the blankets aside, then wrestled the mattress off the box spring and dragged it into the bathroom. It took up the entire floor and curled up at the edges. That was fine. If I have to pee, the toilet's right there. This'll be efficient, I told the radio.
"We have some fun gifts as a way of saying thank you," said Ms. Rogers, sounding tired.
"We've got a mug, and at the $100 amount, this exclusive hoodie." An exclusive hoodie sounded pretty awesome. Clearly, I was developing Radio Stockholm Syndrome, on top of my other problems. I went back to get the blankets and stopped. Spread across the box spring, where they had clearly been wedged under the mattress, lay a pile of papers. They were covered in double-spaced type. Someone had handwritten notes and corrections in ballpoint pen between the lines. I picked up the top page. "I was first lent the Green Book by my friend and mentor, the philosopher Ambrose, as an example of what he referred to as true sin. He believed that the greatest sin lay in seeking things outside the natural order, not in mere wickedness, such as murder. A passion of the lonely soul, Ambrose called it. The Green Book was a diary of one such sinner." I had lost my dog and found, quite by accident, Cotgrave's manuscript.